So it also says if the city does not opt out of the Boston schedule as set forth above, then that schedule shall become a permanent part of collective bargaining agreement, subject to be revised only in accordance with the Firefighters Arbitration Act. So if this were to be approved in its current form, and this were to go through, let's say, the test period, this essentially locks the management of the city in perpetuity to this agreement. Is that right? Let me just preface this, Tim. Based upon the conversations that we just had earlier, that a city ordinance doesn't trump a contract. So what this says is this will remain a permanent part of a bargaining agreement subject to be revised only in accordance with the Firefighter Arbitration Act. What this does is it locks in this mayor, future mayors, this council, and future councils to ever change this particular language unless it's agreed to in contract negotiations. Is that correct?
It doesn't lock the city in more than any other provision of this agreement. It functions exactly the same way as any other provision of the agreement.
So are you saying that by ordinance, the council could change this?
No, I'm saying,
how can it
as
be changed?
We've been saying all night, exactly
right.
The opposite is
right.
True. But I'm saying that's true of every provision in this agreement. The city's not free to change it by ordinance.
I understand that. But this is a new provision in the agreement. As
correct.
I said earlier, so my responsibility is to look at, analyze, and make judgment on the proposed new language. This is a contract ratification. I'm not here to ratify just the proposed changes. I'm here to look at this contract and say, do I want to ratify anything else that's in this contract? Or do I want to have a say on things that I think perhaps might be included or taken out? Now, we know that's only a suggestion. We know we can't do that here in this forum, but that's part of this conversation. This is new language, and this language includes another provision in this agreement that says it cannot be changed unless it's done through the Firefighters Arbitration Act.
Correct.
So
that's
this can't
negotiation.
Be changed.
That's
so
it,
you buy it, you own it forever.
Well, no, not you own it forever. Oh. It's subject to negotiation. The exact same thing could be said for the
right.
OPEB trust that we just discussed.
I understand.
If the firefighters decide that they don't like it, it can't be taken out of the agreement except
right.
through negotiations. It works the
but
same
the for both
But the
legislative branch of government has nothing to say about it. Until a change is negotiated between the executive branch and the bargaining group, and then it comes back before us.
Correct. And
okay.
then you have the opportunity to ratify the agreement that's
right.
brought to you. Or reject the agreement.
So in this, in Article 5, Article 6, it says there exists a voluntary vacation accrual system whereby employees have banked vacation days. Henceforth, commencing with the year 2002, vacation days and going forward, no further accrual of vacation days shall be allowed. Employees who have banked vacation days may choose to use them in the following manner. And those are all things that I know that Councilman Solomon, then became Mayor Solomon, addressed part of that issue, or if not the issue, in June. So is there a list of who these employees are that have banked vacation days and what they are, et cetera?
There is a list. I'm not even sure to the extent any employees have these days left. I'm sure somebody from the union could speak to that, but I believe that at this point there may be no days left. But I'm glad you brought up this provision, because if you skip down to subsection 2, you'll see this is another important provision.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about, I think many of us have talked about some of the undoing the mistakes that have happened in the past, and I think this is an excellent example of this, potentially the most important of the mysterious change that occurred in the last collective bargaining agreement, where the value of a day was changed from 1/5 to 1/4,
right.
and there was a dispute over that, and the city could have tried to fight it in litigation. It's not clear how the change got made, and we have put the, it's clear. If this agreement gets ratified, it goes back to one-fifth.
And Tim, that is very important, and it was certainly a mile marker for Mayor Solomon and the team to do that. But this is also the reasons why we're having all of these other conversations earlier on about what's ambiguous and what's not clear and what's not defined, et cetera, et cetera. And we've already discussed a half a dozen of those things. And that's the reason. Because of this, this was a side deal that was done. Nobody on the council knew about it. As a matter of fact, as was council pointed out by Council McCauley, council never even ratified that. So that wasn't even perhaps a contract that was ratified. But that is an important issue.
Absolutely, but what I can say definitively, we can debate all night, and I'm not suggesting that it's not valuable to debate these things about ambiguities. What I can say with absolute certainty is there are no side agreements with this contract.
Nor am I suggesting there are.
And that's
let me
why,
make
and
that
I'm not
perfectly clear.
You are. I just want to be very clear that this team absolutely insisted that you get Exhibit B to the tentative agreement, which is the complete red lines agreement, and it says no other agreements. This contract is it. There are no side agreements, and to the extent there were, they're wiped out by this agreement.
And I'll repeat, and I'm quite positive, none of my colleagues are suggesting that. But if something isn't clear and it isn't defined in here, so what's wrong with discussing that? What's wrong with bringing that up? And
absolutely,
what's wrong with correcting it?
Absolutely.
This isn't like, you know, I mean, I've made mistakes. We've all made mistakes. But they just need to be corrected. That's all. So we don't end up in some issue later on. On the holidays, I know that we spoke about, you know, the there was a holiday that was given up. Is there, I see on here, Easter Sunday is a holiday. It's a paid holiday. Are there any other bargaining groups or employees in the city that get Easter Sunday as a paid holiday? I'm just curious.
I believe they all do. I mean, it's a fairly, I can't speak to every, I don't have every city contract in front of me.
I'm just curious because I've had other folks ask me about that, so.
I can say it's very common throughout the state that firefighter bargaining units all have, that I'm aware of, have Easter Sunday. I believe the police do.
Yes, that's to confirm. The police do have Easter Sunday.
Okay, so it's police and fire that have that.
Yes, I believe that was done in 1991.
So, if I could, right now, I'd like to defer to our council solicitor. John, could you speak to your comments that you have provided everyone on this council? Could you go through those for us?
Can, but some of them have already been covered, but the ones okay. that haven't been covered, I can quickly go through them. Okay. The first one that I thought had maybe some significance, and it, I called you about it last week, Tim, is in Article 2, Section 2F, and in Article 2, Section 6F, there is language being stricken from the contract. That I looked at, it's not part of, it wasn't dealt with in the fiscal note, but in a prior lifetime, I was the labor attorney for the city back in the 80s and the 90s. That language addresses the filling of vacancies when the staffing, on the department is above minimum manning in any shift, and it allowed for the use of the more senior person on the shift rather than calling back rank for rank in the higher ranks of captain and battalion chief. It was negotiated into the contract by the city at the time in an attempt to address overtime. And I called you at the end of last week wondering what and why it was being, those two sections were being deleted.
Yes, and I said at the time that I did not believe that the removal of these provisions would create any additional overtime liability on the part of the city. I did speak to the chief. I told you prior to that, prior to you and I speaking, and I did speak with him again, and he confirmed that the operational flexibility that the removal of these provisions allows him, he believes, is certainly a benefit to the operations, and nothing in the agreement prevents the city from doing exactly what those provisions required it to do. It just removes the handcuffs from the city to obligate it to operate in a certain way.
Okay, except I'll just offer the comment that at the time when it was, when the city negotiated the language into the contract, it wasn't viewed as a handcuff on the city. It was viewed giving management some flexibility to use the staffing that it was on a platoon when it was above minimum manning for filling a vacancy in the officer ranks. So there's obviously a different viewpoint going on right now, but when it was negotiated in, that was the perspective, that it wasn't
and
a handcuff.
It's also, as we discussed, it's a little bit of an academic discussion in the sense that the department hasn't been operating at above minimum manning in quite some time.
I agree with you that if it's below minimum manning, the provisions don't come into effect at all. They only come into effect if it's above minimum manning. I already addressed the... I just quickly go over it, the change in the work schedule and then the language, which talks in terms of shifts and the vacation and sick days, that talks in terms of days. Some of the other comments on here have already been addressed by the council person. The last one was some dates that are in the agreement. Do you have, you need Exhibit A.
I do have Exhibit A.
Okay.
I also have Exhibit B.
On page 26 of Exhibit A,
yes.
In section one, it talks about the effective dates for tier one and tier two. The tier two for all members who are hired on or after July 1, 2019?
Correct.
All right. If you go to I have too much paper. Part C, section one.
Part C of?
A couple of pages later.
Okay.
Of those provisions on the pension.
Which page are you on? I see. Yes, I see. Yeah.
In those sections, it says the effective date for Tier 2 is June 30, 2018. The year is different.
Okay.
So there's an inconsistency of the dates of when the hiring would take place. Now, I don't know if there's been any hiring.
Yeah, I believe that's a typo, and as a Scrivener's error, as you know, that could be fixed. However, I think it's probably a moot point because I'm not sure there were any new hires since July 1st, 2018 anyway. There weren't, so it wouldn't become an issue.
Okay.
It couldn't become an issue.
If there's been no new hires,
could not,
it's not
correct.
An issue.
But the error's noted and certainly can be corrected.
What did you say about the errors?
I said the Scrivener's error is noted and certainly can be corrected, but since it can't become an issue because there have been no new hires, I'm sure the union would have no issue with correcting it.
And I think we said at the beginning of the hearing, we can't amend anything. This council can't amend mistakes.
I'm not sure that was exactly the statement. I think substantively the document can't be amended because the union has already ratified it. A Scrivener's error is a different matter, I would certainly contend.
Which I disagree with. I mean, we can't pass contracts that have provisions in them that are inaccurate.
But again, that date is not inaccurate. If the contract was passed with the dates as they are, because there were no new hires, it's irrelevant. There could be no grievance filed over it. There would be no possibility of it.
Council President, you have anything else?
No.
Councilman McAllister.
I move that we open to get public comments on this, as the council will still have another opportunity after when we move to the full floor on this. So I move that we open to get public comments.
Seconded.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Members of the public who would like to speak on this matter? Sir, identify yourself for the record.
Good evening. My name is Ken Block. I'm a business owner in Warwick, a taxpayer. You guys covered a lot of ground tonight, and I'm appreciative for all of the information that's come out. I'm especially appreciative for the new process that we're following. It's refreshing to have a contract to digest before you're supposed to vote on it, and for the public to also take a look at. For that, I'm very thankful. One of the most important things that I saw tonight and that I heard tonight, as a business owner and someone who negotiates my own contracts, is the ambiguity that was discussed in the contract, and frankly, that was one of my talking points that I meant to bring up here to you tonight, was the ambiguity directly related to the definition of days, sick days, vacation days, etc. We have certainly learned over time that ambiguities in these contracts can be deadly, and we have a unique opportunity here to not make a mistake that will impact us in the future. And what I would urge everybody to do, and certainly what I do in my own business, when there's a clause that I don't like and that's unclear, and especially when I have agreement from the other side that we can make that better, you make it better. You don't rush a contract through simply because you're feeling some pressure of some sort for time. The decision that you make here today, if you choose to ratify the language as it exists today, will set up some sort of potential problem in the future, and it doesn't have to. We should take the time, you should make the changes, and ensure that the language is as tight as it can possibly be. That's just common sense contracting. And your role in the Warwick City Council is you are not a rubber stamp. You are the only tool that the public has to protect our interests. You're it. There is no other ability. The contract is negotiated away from public view, and it only arises and comes out in front of you right now. If you don't act to protect our interests in terms of strengthening the contract language and ensuring there's no mistakes in there, no one else can do it. If I allow a contract that I negotiate to go through with ambiguous language and I know it, shame on me. If you allow a contract to go through with ambiguous knowledge, shame on you, and you've let all of us down. So let's fix that. It's a common sense thing to do. It's the right thing to do. Another quick comment on something that I found very interesting was the discussion about the 1.5% versus the 3% and the savings, which we learned would go higher if the 3% is what comes out of the arbitrator's decision as opposed to 1.5%. And just a funny story reminds me of a conversation I have with my wife, who on hearing there was a sale said, oh, let's go buy 3 times as much stuff as we would normally buy. Look how much more money we're going to save. Well, there's a cost associated with the 1.5% versus the 3%. And any small savings that we realize with a couple of days that are given back are overwhelmed by the increase in the 1.5% to the 3%. And I just didn't hear anybody really acknowledge that, and I wanted to make sure that that was brought up here tonight. 3% as opposed to 1.5% is a gigantic hit to the taxpayers, no matter which way you slice and dice it. And any small incremental savings on the value of giving back sick days or vacation days is pennies on the dollar relative to the overall cost. We heard the mayor's chief of staff tell us of an epic saga of heroic negotiating and arriving at a contract that is good for everybody. I want to tell you a slightly different story. I want to tell you a tragedy. I want to talk about a year and a half ago, I came before this council, and we dissected and discovered the side deal. We understood the math behind the secret side deal, where unused sick day dollars were being taken at a rate far beyond what the contract that you ratified allowed to be done. That was extra legal. You didn't allocate those monies, but those monies were taken in a side deal that was negotiated between the fire chief at the time, who was the former union president, and the existing union president at the time, and it was witnessed by the city solicitor. You should be extraordinarily skeptical on anything that comes before you right now, because you have been burned and we have been burned. We have been burned by a process run amok. But now we're all here pretending that maybe it didn't happen, but it did. And we're relying on you to protect us from this. And you have to do your own due diligence. I don't believe you should accept any information given to you without proving it on your own. If you have a question about the actuarial studies, perform your own. Take your time. Make sure you don't make a mistake. You don't have to do this tonight, and I urge you not to. Do your due diligence. Make sure you protect the taxpayers' interest. You are the check and the balance. Two more quick points. As far as the OPEB is concerned, I have a problem with the architecture of this plan, and the problem is a simple one. Because the money is put in, it grows over time as it's invested, but at the date of retirement, a fixed dollar amount is determined that will be taken out of the pile of money that the firefighter has accrued by taking 2% of his or her salary for 20 or 25 years, and the interest that it grows, and then we're just gonna say, okay, every year we're gonna remove from that pot of money X thousands of dollars. That ignores the ever-increasing escalating cost of healthcare, which right now, Medicare and Medicaid says goes up 6.5% a year, but as somebody who buys health insurance for families in my business, I can assure you that if it only goes up 6 or 6.5%, I'm doing a jig. Because there are years where it goes up 12%, there's a couple of crisis years where it goes up 20%. So I don't know how we arrive at a fixed percentage and deem that fair to the taxpayers, especially because as that fund accrues value, we're potentially going to pay it back out the door when the firefighter retires. That's broken. It's really not right. It's really not fair. And I would urge you to consider that differently. I would also urge you to consider another element to the possible agreement of whether or not we choose to pay back the accrued value inside what ultimately is a fairly small store of money relative to how much the lifetime health care is going to cost. As long as there's a gigantic unfunded liability, I would argue that any extra money in there should be applied to reduce the liability. I don't see how you can begin paying the money back as essentially a deferred annuity when we're running such a huge deficit. I think the idea is sound. I think it makes sense to, in the future, moving ahead, save the money. But I don't know how you monetize it when there's such a gigantic shortfall in front of us right now. So that's what I took away from listening to everything tonight. There's a lot of pressure. You can feel the pressure. They want this done. They want this done. Now, now, now. In fact, there's even the implied threat. Well, if we don't do it, I don't know, maybe minute manning's going to go up. All these things are going to happen. You know, none of that is really indicative of somebody who's really willing to come here and work something out that works, that accrues to the benefit of everybody. There are some problems in this contract. There are problems that can be solved with time. Most of them don't require a fundamental shift in how much it's worth, except for the OPEB conversation that I've had with you right now. But at the end of the day, do your due diligence. Make sure you protect our interests. Don't make the mistake that councils in the past have made, where you assume that everything you've been given and everything that you've been told is true, or is accurate, or isn't missing something fundamental. And I leave you with this. After I came before you a year and a half ago, and I disclosed to you the value and the math behind the scam, the unused sick time scam, where they were taking money, not allocated by you, unknown to you. After I did that, my office was inspected on a surprise inspection by the fire inspector without any specific problem. It was an anonymous, non-specific complaint. The day after that, the mayor visited my office, and after that, the tax assessor visited my office. These are not the actions of somebody who is operating on a level and fair playing field. And I urge you to protect us. Thank you.
Anyone else would like to speak? Identify yourself for the record, please.
Rob Cody, Ward 7. Good evening, members of the City Council.
Good evening.
I have a number of questions based upon language that I have found that seems to be ambiguous, and I'll speak to you about that in a minute. But I'd like to start by saying that I'm a little bit annoyed at the fact that the city actuary isn't here, so we can't get any answers from him as to whether or not these numbers are actual, you know, if they're really the right numbers. I'm a little bit upset of the fact that the Robinson Law Firm, who filed the petition to vacate the arbitration, is not here, so we could find out from them what their position was and how strongly they felt that they could appeal the arbitrator's decision. Obviously, they must have had some level of confidence because they filed the petition to vacate. And more importantly, I'm really upset at the fact that the mayor's not here to defend something that he calls so, you know, such a good plan, right? Open and transparent. Why wouldn't he be here to answer questions if it was so transparent and it's on the level? So that kind of sets the tone that it's not on the up and up. And what we've found historically is that these negotiations have not been on the up and up for at least 6 years, since 2012. So I've been hearing tonight over and over the words good faith collective bargaining. So I want to go back to the 2012 contract, when just months into the contract, a secret side deal was made between the fire chief and the union president, where monies were absconded. And I don't like to use that term, but that's exactly what it was, because at that time, that secret side deal was unbeknownst to any council member. So that which rewarded the firefighters financially was done in a deceptive manner away from this honorable body. Now, having said that, we know for a fact that members of the administration knew about it. We also had the situation
Excuse me, Mr. Cody. When you say members of the, you're referring to the previous administration?
Correct.
Okay, I just want to clarify that.
Yep.
And let's be careful on making it personal, okay? Yep. Just stick to the facts. Yep.
And the only reason I say that is because members of the previous administration, on the night that Mr. Block and I came before you, when we discovered and disseminated the secret side deal, and we brought you the math, through the public access process, we actually received the handwritten notes from the fire chief to the bookkeeper on how to manipulate the system. But that evening, when I finished my address to the city council at 9:03, at 9:05, I got unsolicited text messages from the former interim chief of staff indicating, congratulations, you just busted a decade-old scheme. And went on to say, and I have these text messages right here, screenshotted, and went on to say, just take a look at Armstrong's payouts directly out of the handbook of manipulation. Now, I don't know how that individual knew that this was a decade-old scheme, because at the time, Mr. Block and I only had information from 2016, which we disseminated to bring that information to the good council. I also got a text message unsolicited stating that the secret side deal was never ratified in either the 2012 or the 2015 contract. So what does that tell you? Unsolicited, I get these messages. And that says that a member of the administration, former administration at the time, now a member of this administration, knew all along that there was monies that were being paid out that were not ratified in the contract. That's fact. Some of you have seen those documents. So some of the questions that I have relative to the issue at hand were, there may be a legitimate reason for the firefighters to arbitrate from the 2012 contract where language was not specific or wasn't spoken in good faith, what have you. But in 2015, that language was clear in the contract. It was clear in the fiscal note. It was clear in the tentative agreement. And it was signed by the union president and the fire chief. Now all of a sudden, the mayor wants to take the 24 men that were hired in 2016 and roll them back into the Tier 1 system. And he has no legal grounds to do that. Why is he doing that? So now is the fire department's position saying, well, we actually didn't discuss it in private, or we actually thought this meant something else? The fire department signed a contract. They accepted the contract and the tentative agreement. And not only did they do that in 2015, but then they went back, and when they implemented the language into the 2015 contract, they made another change on vacation pay, where unused vacation pay was paid out at 1/5 of the firefighter's salary. They changed that fraction to 1/4. And that was a cause for just under $100,000 of money to be paid out, which was not in the tentative agreement, it was not in the fiscal note, and it never came before this before this city council to be discussed, and you never saw it.
And Mr. Cody, again, just another point, that was also the policy, I believe, that Mayor Solomon stopped in
That's
June.
Correct.
Correct?
Okay. Yes, I give him credit. Unfortunately, he stopped it, but we did not get restitution, and that amounts to almost $500,000. Because of what Mr. Block and I had discovered and disseminated and brought before the council, this council, under Council President Solomon, hired a third-party CPA firm. And one of the things that they were tasked to do was to figure out exactly how much money was taken, let's say, for lack of a better term, under false pretenses, right? That was not in accordance with what was ratified. The city council put forth tens of thousands of dollars to that third-party accounting firm. And that began in February 20th of 2018. And as of this date, we have not seen that accounting. Now, I know what the number is, and certain members of the city council know what the number is. But that document needs to be released because the taxpayers paid for it. And it's a document that's relevant to this conversation in a lot of ways. So, you know, I heard what the esteemed attorney, Mr. Regusta, spoke about. And one of the things he said was that there was little chance to overturn this arbitration ruling unless, of course, you could find, for example, fraud, which is what he said about an hour and a half ago. So I want to ask the city council, when a collective bargaining unit comes before you and you sign and ratify a contract, and then behind your back they go and they manipulate the language to be paid out monies that you weren't aware of, that you didn't ratify, that you didn't know about, the taxpayer didn't know about it, and those monies were paid out through electronic wire transfer in most cases. Is that not fraud? Is that good faith collective bargaining, or was it a mistake? Was it a mistake? You know, a mistake is your wife tells you to go to the market and get 6 apples and you come home with 6 oranges. Not we have a collective bargaining agreement that's looked over by lawyers and city solicitors and city council solicitors, and then we find out only because of the due diligence of taxpayers that the numbers don't add up, and we have an element of, let's call it, deception. I don't want to use the harsh term fraud. I don't want to offend anybody. But on face value, was that what we bargained for? Was that the bill of goods that the City of Warwick residents were sold? No, it wasn't. And more importantly, the City Council was deceived by this not good faith collective bargaining, by the deception that went on behind closed doors, by certain members of the former administration that knew all about it. But we're to assume now that those same members now in this administration are coming forth before this council and before these taxpayers touting this new contract as this is wonderful, and it's going to save us all kinds of money. I find it very interesting that on page 2, the mayor states that the implementation, that this is page 2 of the documentation that includes the red line contract. This is the mayor's cover letter. On page 2, he states that the implementation of the 24-hour system could save the city money. Could save the city money. You could be a winner, right? But there's nowhere in that contract where it shows this is how much it's going to save. And if he was so confident that this system is going to save the city money, why is there a clause in there that says, well, if it doesn't save us any money and it winds up costing us more money, we can revert back to the old system? There's no one on the city council and nobody in this audience that would enter into a contract with such ambiguous language. It sets you up for failure, and it sets you up for litigation. And this type of sloppiness is exactly why you're in litigation now. And to the point of litigation, I don't see anybody discussing tonight where when we roll back these 24 firefighters that were hired in 2016 under a contract that they signed, that was ratified in accordance with the city charter rules and regulations, we're going to roll them back into the system along with members from the 2011-2012 era, which again, I don't have an issue with that. I think that's a legitimate point to argue. However, when we do this, the cost, the immediate cost of this, if you look at the city website and you look at the financial documents that were put forth, the cost is $2.8 million to just roll them back in the back pay. And that doesn't include any increase in the ARC payment, which is yet to be determined. Now, as Mr. Marola stated, we can only raise $8.3 million a year with a maximum tax increase. When you read the city document clearly states we don't have the $2.8 million to pay them back, so we're going to have to finance that over 20 years, and that payback now becomes $4.5 million. Nobody's spoken about that tonight. So we're hearing that we could possibly save $300,000. Okay, let's look at the credit side, and I said this before, let's ignore the debit side, right? So we already have $4.5 million that we have to pay back. You're also poised to sign a contract where you have a provision in arbitration that has yet to been settled. How can you do that? You can't predict the numbers. And by the way, the question that I would have to anyone on the finance, to my city councilman, Mr. McAllister, when they do settle that provision in arbitration that's still outstanding for the raise in 2018, is that going to affect retroactively their pay? Do you have the answer for that?
Mr. Cody, I think that it would be more prudent to ask the finance people from the city whether or not they have that answer.
Okay, well, the only reason I wanted to ask...
Which is fine if you want to do that.
Yeah, the only reason I wanted to ask my councilman or any other councilman is for one reason. Have you been provided that information? So I would ask you again, Mr. McAllister, have you been provided that information?
I'll answer the question.
Oh, I actually want Mr. McAllister on the Finance Committee to answer the question because he's my council member, and I want to have a feeling that he actually has a fundamental grasp on all of these ambiguous issues.
If I'm going to check on procedure first before he answers the question.
Please, thank you.
To the solicitor, are we allowed to answer questions or are we strictly here to hear testimony? Legal opinion.
This is on the docket. It's been published under the Open Meetings Act, so you can answer questions.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. So my question stands to my council member. Has this been presented to you, and do you know the intricacies of whether or not this retroactive pay raise, how it's going to affect their pay previous and the overtime that we've paid out? Are we going to have to pay them retroactive on the overtime, and what is the financial impact of that?
So, Mr. Cody, wouldn't it be better, because I'm answering the question if you want to ask me, and I haven't seen it in here. And I can tell you I spent about 30 hours going through this contract. Mm-hmm. It's very confusing, as is contracts in general. You get into the contracts that we do in a day-to-day business venue, and they can be confusing, let alone all the legal terminology, et cetera, that's in this contract or any other contract. So with having said that, I don't know if the answer to that question. I would suggest you defer the question to the finance person in the city of Warwick and ask them that question.
I actually know the answer to the question.
No, you asked the question, Mr. Cody, now that you've asked the question, I want to get the answer from the finance director, if that's okay.
All right, I have no problem with that. But I think the point that I'm trying to make is, in the past, we've had contracts before that come before the city council where members of the council, don't understand them. And this is extremely important. And I want to know from my council member, who obviously doesn't want to answer this question, does he know the answer? Is he familiar with the intricacies of the contract? So I'll accept that as a no, and we can get to the finance people in a minute.
So, Brian, if you could just come to the podium and answer the question.
As mentioned previously, this is still an arbitration item. We're not going to get into the details of that, but the funds are budgeted within the FY20 budget, and the funds are available. And it is not a fiscal impact to the city.
Okay.
It absolutely... See, this is the great play on words. It absolutely has an impact to the city because you're paying out more money. Whether or not it was budgeted for the 2020 contract is irrelevant. You spent monies in the 2019 contract, in the 2019 budget. We thought that was a closed deal and a closed budget, right? But now, because of what's taken place, we have to allocate more money. So, Brian, I don't know how Brian can come up and say, oh, it has no impact to the city. Is it make-believe money? It has an impact to the city. You have to pay them back. And when you had $2.9 million worth of overtime, and now you're saying, well, depending on arbitration, if it's 1.5%, if it's 3%, whatever the percentage is, and we have to go back to that overtime line item and increase it, does it have an impact to the city? Yes, it does. Of course it does. And it has an impact to these taxpayers. So, I want to go down the list, and Mr. Lattisaw, I have some questions that I'm going to ask. I have a copy for you, so you can have it for later on if you want to reflect on them. So, I'm going through the contract. On page 30, it discusses holiday pay. It may be a simple thing, but we've already seen how simple language complicates things. Holiday pay states that the member shall be paid one quarter of his weekly pay on holiday. But it indicates that the member shall be paid 1 1/4 of his weekly pay. Maybe it's a typo, probably is. But he signed this contract tonight and you own it. And that's a point that they could arbitrate. So what are we paying them? Are we paying 1/4 of the week's pay? Or are we paying 1 1/4 of the week's pay? I don't know if anyone else picked that up in the contract, but it's there. That's in the contract. It's on page 30 under holiday pay. And it's page 30 according to, you know, that contract says the numbers are going to change. It's page 30 on the red line document that you guys have.
It's also on page 30 in the full contract, too.
Correct.
Mr. Cody, you said you had a copy of those questions that you were going to give me?
Yes.
May I have it?
Sure.
Through the clerk, please. Thank you.
Another one, on sick leave, right? So we have a projection that the city is going to save a certain amount of money because we're going to reduce the sick leave from 20 days to 16 days, correct? And Brian and other members have come, Brian and Mr. D'Amico have come before you, giving you some projections. I don't know how accurate they are, that we're going to reduce the sick time from 20 to 16 days. But I think everybody needs to read it because the immediate sentence after that states that at the discretion of the chief, he can allocate additional sick time. So what does that mean? How much additional sick time? Are there any parameters? The language is so vague that on day one, when you implement this contract, the chief of the department can say, hey, guess what? Everybody gets another 4 sick days. Nothing you can do about it. That sentence needs to come out of that contract. And another question I would ask my council member in terms of sick time, are you aware of how much sick time that the fire department has in the bank, Mr. McAllister? Steve? You don't want to answer this one either?
Mr. President?
Hold on. Okay, thank you. We go through the chair.
Through the chair. Can I ask my council member?
You have a right to ask the question.
Mr. McAllister, are you aware of how much sick time the fire department has in the bank as of this date?
At this time, I am here to listen to the public for their comments, so you can ask your question, and I would refer you to any member of the administration here that can answer those questions
okay.
for you. I'm using this time to listen to the public to hear your concerns.
And again, Mr. Harrington said we could ask you questions, but obviously you don't want to answer that question, which tells me that you don't know. So I'll give you that information. As of February of 2019, the Warwick Fire Department had 22,850 days of unused sick time in the bank. That's, to simplify it for you, that's 62.4 years of unused sick time in the bank. That number came to me through a records request. It's an official document from the City of Warwick. So why would we have to have a stipulation in the sick time that at the sole discretion of the chief, he can allocate more sick time? That sentence needs to go from this contract. It's ambiguous. It has no boundaries. Is it two? Is it five? Is it 500? There's no boundaries. And it's unenforceable. So I would beg that the City Council really look at that and strike that, because it's a ridiculous provision in the contract. I've spoken about this before on page 32 and 33, Mr. Chairman, in terms of uniform allowances. Here's some more language that's ambiguous. In the last contract, we gave out just under $1 million, $900,000 and change, for uniform allowances and uniform maintenance. $1,450 per man per year. Not one penny of that is accountable for. And in the next sentence, what's at stake? If the man's uniform becomes damaged, then we pay for it anyway. So it's not a uniform allowance, it's deferred compensation. So let's call it what it is. There's no situation where the man is gonna have to come out of pocket and buy a uniform. If his uniform gets damaged on the job, he doesn't call Joe, the uniform guy, and say, hey, I need two more uniforms. He goes to the city and says, I damaged my uniforms. They say, oh, here's some new ones. He doesn't use uniform allowance. It's deferred compensation. Now, whenever that was negotiated, I don't know why it was negotiated, but if it's deferred compensation, if it's some type of a perk, call it that. But it's clearly not uniform allowance, and it's deceptive, and I think that's another area in the contract that you need to look at. On page 46, paragraph E, it talks about the pay that a member will receive if he has to go to court or if he has to prepare papers off the job. Not sure what that means, if he has to prepare papers. Maybe that's the writing of grants. Maybe that's, I don't know what it could be because it's vague. But it says that the individual will be paid at time and a half based on a 40-hour work week. From everything that we've said here tonight and all of the contract data, it says that the fire department is based on a 42-hour work week, correct? So why are you basing time and a half for these activities based on a 40-hour work week? Work week's not 40 hours, it's 42 hours. That's already been established. So I think there's some corrective measures that need to be taken there. Because again, it's ambiguous language. I also want to talk about something that nobody wants to talk about, is substitutions. All right? The ability. You guys can come to the mic if you like.
Excuse me, Mr. Cody. Do not be
the ability.
Mr. Cody.
Yeah.
I give a lot of latitude. Please do not address the members of the public and exercise due respect, please.
And they should do the same.
I just said so.
So under substitutions, we had a situation with substitutions. Under the contract guidelines, it states that substitutions are allowable by written permission from the chief only, from the battalion chief. We went down this road and we found out that that wasn't the case. We also found out that under the Secretary of State's regulations of record retention, that those requests for leave under substitution were supposed to be maintained for 4 years. They were destroyed then, and they're being destroyed now. In the 2018 budget hearings, then Fire Chief McLaughlin had stated that it's a mutual exchange of time and it's done on the honor system. Meaning, if one firefighter substitutes for another firefighter, then that firefighter owes him that back. But you're not keeping any records of it. And the official records that we receive from the city shows that that's not being done. We have individuals with 25 and 30 days of substitution that haven't paid any of them back. And if you recall, in the city of Boston, that became a really big deal because people were going out the door with pay and benefits and they had not paid those back. So I understand that in emergency situations, substitution is a valid tool. I don't think it's a tool that can be used to play baseball when we had, in one weekend last year, 41 substitutions so members could go play softball. What comes first? What's the priority, softball or your obligation to the city and into your job? So the problem with substitution is that no records were being kept at the time. Now, unless something's changed, if it has been changed, that language should be in the contract. But that provision has been abused for years, and it needs to end.
Mr. Cody, let me ask you a question. So you stated, and correct me if I misunderstood, you stated that this type of thing with the documentation of sick time, swapping time, whatever, was something that was going on in the past, correct?
Yes.
You also said, and it's still going on now.
Yes. Well, as of 2018, it was still going on.
Okay, that's a big difference.
Yeah.
So my question to you is, do you have definitive proof that that is going on now?
I'm
clarifying the statement.
No, but,
okay?
but I also...
What's fair is fair here.
Right. I also have no documentation to show that anything has been changed. What I do have is a letter from the Secretary of State that states that they came to the city of Warwick and that the fire department did not even have a records retention program, which they're obligated to do by law.
That was in the past, right?
Right.
Okay.
So what I'm saying now, there's nothing in this contract that shows any language that is different from in the past.
But I cannot, let me back, it is not fair to stand there and say that it continues to go on now.
No, I have a document from the Secretary of State that it indicates that they are disposing of the documents.
From the Secretary of State.
Yeah, and I got that in the summertime.
That's going on.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I don't know if it's been changed. My point for bringing up this about substitutions is it hasn't been used on the honor system. The documents that we have from the city show clearly that it's not a mutual exchange of time. And all I'm saying is that you need to look at this and you need to say, look, if you're going to substitute for another guy, a piece of paper goes in your file. So at any time, a member of the city council or a member of the executive branch of government can go and say, hey, Joe, you took off 27 changes of shift this year. How many did you give back? That's all I'm saying. The way it was done in the past, much like the way these contracts were brought before you in the past, was sloppy. And it's something that should be addressed, and we should know if, in fact, it was changed, I will applaud that, what changes were made, and how has it been corrected. So I'll move off of that topic. So, page 49, article 11 on salaries, the table lists the salaries and the raise schedule, but it doesn't list the impact of the 2018 retroactive raise. that is now in arbitration. So those numbers are all wrong, right? They haven't assumed the increase from 2018. That's still before arbitration. So you actually have a list of salaries in this contract before you that are completely incorrect. And every one of them is going to change. So how do you vote on a contract when that information is missing?